Welcome to Deep Look, UltiWorld's weekly radio show about the current state of Ultimate. I am the host and the editor of UltiWorld, Charlie Eisenhood. Keith Rayner is out on paternity leave. So I am officially signed up for Summer League. That just feels so great. And I'm seeing people on Twitter and social media talking about getting back out and playing Summer League and, you know, getting hurt or having it be a terrible game, losing by 10 goals. And yet it's still just so great to get back out there. I cannot wait. I'm pretty sure our first game is going to be end of the month, maybe first week of July. There's like some warm-up games coming up a little bit later in June. And, you know, honestly, like 3 or 4 months ago, it wasn't totally clear whether there was going to be Summer League. So the fact that we're at this point is very great. You know, if you're maybe you skip Summer League because you're a club player or something like that. But even if I was playing club, I'm pretty sure I would play Summer League every single year. It's just got a different vibe. It's fun in a way that more competitive levels of the sport aren't always, I think. So I'm just super excited to be, you know, getting back out there and I mean, seeing people again that I haven't seen in over a year. So pumped for that. Hopefully you're playing Summer League as well. Today on the show, we've got a little bit of news to get to, and then we'll be talking some AUDL week one, making our picks against the spread in our battle with Stall 7. First up, Ben Feng is the new director of college competition programs at USA Ultimate. He's taking over for Tom Manowitz, who is leaving the position here sometime in the next couple weeks. And it's been a long, you know, 5-year run for Tom Manowitz. He's done a great job in the college division. And very excited to see Ben Feng get this gig. Ben's super involved in coaching and playing club. And he's done some work for UltiWorld in the past. And it's just, I think he's going to do a great job with the division. He's fresh out of grad school, getting a degree in sports management. So, I'm excited to see him kind of sticking around Ultimate and not ending up in, you know, another sport, because he's worked in various other venues in the sport. And hopefully we'll have him on here on the show soon, talk with him once he gets his feet under him at USAU. Great sign, by the way, that USAU is starting to hire again. I mean, this is obviously a position that they will have to have filled always, but they've also hiring or soon will be hiring a new person in their media department. So that's pretty cool to see. They, you know, Maylin Davinsky left the position last winter, and they never filled it because of the pandemic. So we'll see USAU adding another media person, and we'll find out soon who that's going to be. Up on the website, up on UltiWorld, there's now a club season tracker. We're keeping track of the Nationals teams from 2019 and what their plans are this season. And, you know, we've talked about it so much on the show, the uncertainty about what teams are going to be doing, what their plan is for this year, whether they're going to play, whether they're going to go to travel tournaments or not. So we're starting to actually collate all of that information in one place. And, you know, we still don't know. I mean, honestly, some teams still don't know the answers to some of these questions. There's a lot of teams that are still in the tryout process or haven't even started the tryout process. And so we're going to see. I mean, the fact is probably less than 50% of these teams are going to be going to big travel tournaments this year. Now, having spoken to various teams about this, you know, I think particularly teams on the East Coast may decide to play more local competition, not because they don't want to get reps against other elite teams, but because now, given that there's no rules in place for having to travel to certain tournaments, they can just play the teams on the East Coast in order to compete and get those reps. So, you know, for example, I imagine Boston Invite is going to be very well attended this year, a very strong tournament. That's coming up in July. Philly Open is going to be in early August, and I think that might just be mixed only, but I'm sure that's going to be highly competitive. And so there's lots of teams up here in the tracker that are currently listed as limited, which basically means they're playing the series, but they're probably not traveling to TCT events, or at least at this point have not committed to traveling to any of the TCT events. We'll see where things shake out. I think that, you know, Pro Elite, as we talked about a couple weeks ago on the show, not going to be very well attended, probably going to be, you know, a handful of good teams and then maybe some lower level teams, and they're probably not going to fill the divisions out to 16 teams. But once we get out to US Open, which is the first weekend of August, and then the Pro Championships, which are at the end of August, beginning of September, I think teams are going to be a lot more willing to travel at that point. I think just generally day after day, you're seeing people get more comfortable, you know, getting back out there, practicing, thinking about tryouts, wanting to play. So keep an eye on the tracker as we keep track of all of those elements of this kind of return to play and this strange club season, which, by the way, remember, no rankings, no requirements, basically no rules. You can switch teams however many times you want. We already know the bid allocation for nationals, so it really just comes down to who are people going to play for in the series. So some teams are just saying, you know what, we're just going to show up for the series. Other teams are going to Pro Elite Challenge and are ready to go and play at a tournament in mid-July. So we're going to be all over the map, and you know, we're working on club preview stuff right now, and it's an interesting year to write about the club division, given that we haven't seen any rosters yet. I literally don't think there have been any competitive teams that have put out a roster yet. So something to keep an eye on. Looking forward to seeing what the shape of the club season is. And by the way, how it changes things in the future. I think teams are probably going to like all of the flexibility that they have this year. I think they're going to like the revival of Boston Invite as a, you know, elite competitive event. So there's already been some griping about the TCT and its, you know, relative rigidity. How much are things going to change for 2022 based on what happens this season? That's going to be a story to keep an eye on, because it's not just pandemic effects. It's also, you know, what do teams want out of their club season? Lots of AUDL action this past weekend. We're going to get more into that in the next segment. Also want to point you over to the Stall 7 podcast, where they talk every week about all things AUDL. And Chris McGlynn and Alex Rubin will have you covered with all the storylines that are going on in that league. Right now, still not much in the way of club tournaments to speak of. Couple things starting to pop up here and there, but looks like kind of the unofficial start to the season is really going to be that Pro Elite Challenge middle of July. Maybe one or two smaller events happening before then. And it's, you know, people are still just kind of getting back out to have practices together. And that, you know, it takes time to feel comfortable going to a tournament. However, Richmond Cup coming up this weekend. Stay tuned for preview coverage of that event. Some very, very good teams competing. A team that looks suspiciously like Amp. A team that looks suspiciously like Space Heater. Not by those names. Toro is there. So some high quality teams from the East Coast playing for a $10,000 prize purse. We're going to be there covering it with video coverage. Not live, but stay tuned for free YouTube coverage of the event. And we've got some cool stuff in store and lots of cameras and interviews. Looking forward to kind of what is the kickoff club tournament. And what a way to kick it off, with the winner taking home $7,500 for their team, the biggest prize for winning an ultimate tournament that I can remember ever. So that's kind of cool. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk some AUDL, make some picks, and get you set for this coming weekend. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Deep Look, and what a treat. Look who has decided to make an appearance. Keith Rayner is here. New father alert.
and still on leave, but decided that he had to get in here and give some takes on the podcast. Keith, how are you?
I'm doing well, Charlie, as well as can be. I mean, I feel like my wife and I are doing the best we can, and we're getting a decent amount of sleep, I feel like. So far, so good. Knock on wood. Want to make sure that continues. But, we've had a couple doctor's visits. Miles is healthy and growing at the rate that we had hoped. So all I can say so far is good stuff. And my mom is actually flying in to visit next week. So she'll be the first person from my family to come up. It'll be the first time I've seen her since the pandemic started myself, but she'll also get to meet her grandson.
I mean, this is really great timing to have the baby, because the pandemic is like coming to an end right now. And so you get to have your family around, which is awesome. I know at this age, this is probably the answer is probably no, but like, is Miles showing any personality traits or signs of personality at this point?
It's tough to say because like, I feel like any traits that he may be showing that I feel like we see are more imposed by us. Like they're what we want to see or what we interpret as personality. I guess he has temperament so far, which is that personality. He seems pretty relaxed. He rarely has like big freakouts or anything. But he's like not really at the point where he's engaging so much with you. Like he can't control his limbs. He's like maybe just starting to learn to smile, but he doesn't like smile in reaction to you or laugh. So like that kind of stuff, I feel like we'll start to let him express his personality more than where he is right now.
Well, that's awesome. And so, you and Julia are doing well, feeling good.
Yeah. I mean, she's amazing. So Miles and I are both lucky. And if you like having gone through this process, like one of the first things I want to do is just like call my mom and even my dad and just be like, thank you. Thank you so much. Like, but especially my mom, like what women go through for this child raising business is really unbelievable stuff.
Well, that's great. I know you've been at least paying some attention to what's been going on in Ultimate, because I see you in the Discord and around. So did you get a chance to watch any of the AUDL games this weekend?
I did. It was exciting to have Ultimate back. I cannot lie to you. Like, being able to actually digest and consume and discuss Ultimate was really fun. And so I was certainly glad to get to take in some of the AUDL games and get a sense, not only from like a presentation standpoint, I find myself like monitoring that sort of thing, but also just seeing the teams and the narratives come to life on the field.
So, I mean, we got to get your takes for week one. What do you think? What stands out to you?
Look, you got to start at the show stealing ending of Madison and Minnesota, right? Like what a wild conclusion to that game. And dramatic, confusing. There was a lot there, and it was it sloppy? Yes. Like it was not the best game I've ever seen. And the conclusion itself was also sloppy, but like you can criticize and feel like it makes the AUDL feel amateurish, but like, is that really that different than like the end of an NBA playoff game where teams are just like fouling the hell out of each other and Kevin Herter's throwing the ball away in the backcourt and Trae Young is just like slinging it to the Sixers trying to choke away a basketball game? Like, not really. It was just confusing and chaotic. Or the U.S. men's national team soccer game against Mexico. Like, there was a bunch of crazy stuff that happened. So that stuff happens in big major sports as well. And it was fun to see a very dramatic ending. I really thought the Winchill were done for. I cannot believe they pulled it out of that.
They got the cover too, which is pretty amazing.
Oh yeah. If you were a better, that is a truly bad beat. Like the disc with 2 seconds Madison left and all you have to do is not do what happens. Oh man.
Well, how about Atlanta getting the win against Raleigh? I thought that was pretty impressive to see them, you know, with a lot of new pieces to integrate, come out and beat a team that's got a lot of cohesion and has just been dominating them for the most part for the last few years.
Indeed. And I don't really know exactly, like, I feel like I'm going to need more season context to get a sense of what that win means, because I don't really feel like either team play to their ceiling. There were like some flashes, but it wasn't the new players necessarily for Atlanta, unless you're counting Parker Bray, that I felt like made the biggest impact. You know, some of the names that you've consistently seen on the field for them. I will say, man, is Matt Smith just so much fun to watch. I mean, he's just one of those players that when the disc is up in the air, you know something exciting is going to happen. And he's got that springiness and he's a little small. So it's like that Spud Webb-esque, like, oh, anytime he dunks, it looks just incredible because he's so high off the ground. But Matt Smith was really exciting in that game. But it wasn't like Antoine Davis and John Stubbs were just taking over for the team in the way that you saw someone like Ryan Osgar or unheralded John Lithgow do for the Empire. It was kind of a yeoman's game. Not sure, again, what to make of it. I don't think like Raleigh played that well. I don't think Atlanta even played that well. But a gritty, really valuable win for Atlanta that I think speaks to their potential this year.
The first half offense was dreadful from both teams. I mean, I don't really know that there was a lot of clean, beautiful ultimate out there this weekend. In a way, I think you could say it was better than maybe we might have expected. But, you know, I was at the New York game. They beat D.C., but they beat D.C. by throwing like 7 jump balls and winning every single one of them. That's not even really an exaggeration. I mean, they just dominated them athletically in the air, including, of course, on the game winner, Jack Williams pulling down, you know, with time expiring over a pack of players to get the 1-point win. It wasn't a beautiful offensive performance from the Empire. I mean, there were some good moments, some good hucks and things, but there are also some inexplicable turnovers. And I think we're going to see that over these first couple weeks of the season. I mean, much as you'd see really in any year, but that's obviously compounded by the fact that people haven't played competitive ultimate in over a year. And in some cases, almost 2 years, you know, for club players who are in the college season, they may not have played since, you know, last October 2019.
And I'll say, I said this on Twitter, but they are not the only ones who haven't done this in over a year. Guess who else? Everybody else. The refs haven't reffed in over a year. Could be new refs. Yeah. You know, this is a big, we see all this turnover in players. That's going to happen for personnel too. So that extends to camera people, commentators, refs, like everybody involved in this is either getting their feedback under them or potentially could be a new person in a new role. So I tried to, even though I saw some gaffes here and there, I tried to, you know, give everybody a little grace period because we're kind of working ourselves back into it. You were at the Empire game in person. So I got to know, John Lithgow, what's the deal? Is this guy the real deal or just a hot game?
I think he's the real deal. I mean, he was blowing me away. I mean, I was in the production booth and it was like, oh my God, he just scored deep again. So, you know, we pulled up some stats on him. I'm talking to players and coaches on the team. They said, this is not a surprise. You know, we expected John Lithgow to come out and have this kind of performance. You know, it's so rare to have a name you've literally never heard show up and play at that level. I think it goes to show you, I forget where he's from. I think he's from the South.
Hope College, I want to say, is the words I saw throw out. I still don't know what that is.
Yeah, so I think it's just one of those things where, you know, you've got a big fish in a small pond, and like if you're never showing up on you know, at top college or club tournaments, people aren't going to know who you are. People aren't going to find out about you. And so, you know, you move to New York City, you make the team, boom, you come out, and now, you know, all of a sudden you've got this new player. But I think absolutely he looks legit. I mean, if nothing else, clearly a piece that's going to fit in really well on the offense. How do you cover this Empire offense? It's really hard. You know, they have a lot of big, powerful athletes. And when you have Osgar like catching unders and throwing deep to Yacht, Klein, Lithgow, I don't really know how you're going to stop that offense once it gets moving. The question marks for me are more at the handler position for them, but I think, you know, we got to give them some time to see.
Yeah, you got to stop them at the point of the attack. I've been consuming so much NBA content as the NBA playoffs come on, and I haven't had a chance to I've let you off the hook. Have not yet given you the business for the performance of one Julius Randle and his New York Knickerbockers against my Atlanta Hawks. But I'll just I feel like the sting is there, so I'll just say it and move on. I've had a chance to, so you're seeing these guards try and like navigate their way through pick and rolls and stuff. And I feel like that's kind of like, is there some semblance of the same concepts when you're trying to stop the point of attack? Like the handlers who are initiating, creating the offense, is that like trying to create, trying to contain a ball dominant guard from starting the pick and roll, from getting the offense initiated? And we'll see how teams adjust to the personnel that we've seen from the Empire thus far. But you're right. Definitely exciting to see Lithio. He's the edge numbers, which you can see on Ulti World, do are a little tamer on, you know, a big counting stats day for Lithio, but there's no way to spin it other than the guy's good. Of course, his teammates are going to be like, oh, we're not surprised. I mean, that's about as coach speak as we can get. But you know, hey, I'm even glad to have coach speak back in Ultimate.
Yeah, but I mean, there was some preseason buzz too. I got to give credit for that. They weren't just, you know, giving us the 2020 hindsight.
Offense, the smoothest offense I saw. And to be fair, I didn't watch much of any of the blowout games that happened. So there are a couple of those. Maybe those offenses look smooth and they're crushing defeats. But Boston had some pretty smooth moments. It wasn't always there, but Benson Oak is a real engine for that offense. And that team has, I'm very curious to see how they do this week. Let's say
people sleep on Benson Oak. You know, it's been a few years since he was dominating at UMass, and the whole thing was, oh, you know, he's not going to translate as well to the higher level because of his size. And, you know, he's translated. I mean, he played on Sprout last club season, and, you know, they just about went to nationals. They almost upset Pony. They probably should have. Pony got lucky to get out of that game with a win. And so that was a big reason why. So to see him out there on the ADL field dominating, I mean, I'm just not surprised. He's got the tools, and like the size is a challenge, but at the position, it can work. It's like watching Chris Paul, you know, like you don't have to be huge if you can create separation and you can know in the case of Ultimate, you can get off your throws. So I'm really excited to see this Boston Atlanta game this weekend, which brings us into our picks. We've got our picks contest going on with Stall 7. Keith, we went 3-3 in round one. I appreciate you trusting me with the picks.
Nicely handled.
Yes, thank you. And we've got three games to pick this weekend against the spread. Still not dealing with actual spreads set by sportsbooks. We're setting our own lines. I set the lines this week. I think they're kind of tough, to be honest. Keith and I went back and forth on these a bit. But let's get into them. We have this Boston-Atlanta game. It's Atlanta traveling up to Boston. Boston 2.5-point favorites. Who are we taking?
This has got to be the toughest line, right? Because I feel like these are two of the teams that we maybe know the littlest about. Where Atlanta, really impressive win. Boston also a very impressive win. But Atlanta on the road. I feel like if you had to power rank these teams, I'm actually not sure exactly where they are in our power rankings now. But I feel like if you had to power rank these teams, they are. Atlanta's at 5 and Boston's at 7. So that I feel like that this is a test of home field advantage. I'm not sure if we're going to see a team like Atlanta travel that well, that far away. So it's tough. I feel like heads up, they're the better team. 3 goals is kind of a lot to ask for. So what do you think? I'm really on the fence here. Do you have a strong lead?
I can understand it. I mean, here's my general take. I think more than usual, there's going to be home field advantage this year, not because of crowds. I mean, that probably has some small effect, but more because of the challenges of travel this year. And we know, for example, you know, John Stubbs, great pickup for Atlanta, not playing away games. So he won't be there. I'm pretty sure Christian Olsen won't be there either. They only had 19 players. They're picking up Dylan Tunnell, who lives up in the Massachusetts area, for this game specifically, former MVP of the league. That's cool. It's like a fun storyline. I mean, it's hard for me to really expect Dylan Tunnell to come in and like ball out, but if anybody can do it, Dylan Tunnell. But I just think that, you know, on a neutral field, this is a coin flip game, but with Boston being at home, the way they looked against Pittsburgh, which was suffocating, dominant. I mean, they went on a crazy first or second quarter run and just put the game away. I think you have to take Boston here. Even if you think like in a playoff matchup with both teams at full strength, more coin flip. You know, the 2.5 is really the question. I think if it was 1.5, it's an easy lock for me to take Boston. But either way, I'm leaning Boston here just because I think it's going to be tough for Atlanta. You know, it's also a letdown spot. Let's be honest. They're coming off this Raleigh win. All the focus of the preseason and everything is like, we've got to beat this Raleigh team. And now you got this game against Boston. And like, yeah, you care, but it's a road game. It's a long way to go, right? This is a big travel. I don't know if they're flying or they're driving, but either way, that's going to be tough. I just think you add those things up, the way Boston looked, I see them winning this game by 4 or 5 goals.
I think road teams went 4-7 in week one, not counting the Austin-Dallas game.
Throw out Detroit. That team's horrible.
Well, Detroit played one home, one away. So you can kind of throw them out with the numbers, but
throws itself out. Yeah.
Right. It kind of throws itself out. So yeah, I guess that all that said, I'm with you on Boston. Let's roll with Boston here.
All right. The next game we've got, if I can find my list,
I have it.
Dallas traveling to Austin, Dallas -5.5, big road favorites.
And with good reason. This is an Austin team that we have pretty low expectations for versus a Dallas team that in some ways is the title favorite. So given the blowouts that we saw last week, I'm kind of inclined to be willing to lean into that big line. It's like a pseudo road game too for Dallas. You know, how far is it from Dallas to Austin? You know, like can't be that far, right? Like
a couple hours, 3 hours, I think.
Right. Manageable for a drive. I shouldn't say can't be that far because it's Texas. It could be 28 hours and still be in Texas. At least that's what it feels like when I drive through Texas. But 5.5 feels doable, especially if this Austin team is going to be at the level of some of the other teams that struggled on the road this week. You know, your Detroits, your Indianapolis's, your Tampa Bay's. So I'm riding with Dallas here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, I will say Austin before their game, Dallas hosted Austin last week. Game got canceled for thunderstorms. Austin opened up that game with a couple goals, a couple breaks. I'm not going to overread into that. Dallas is the far superior team. I think it's all honestly kind of lucky, you know, Dallas get that little wake up call like, hey, like maybe we shouldn't start by giving up a couple breaks. The line is wide, but I think if Dallas plays to their potential, they should probably win by 10. So I'm with you here. Dallas -5.5. Final game out of the Central Division. It is Minnesota traveling to Chicago. In what I think is going to be, this is already, you know, these teams are going to be jockeying for the one seed in the Central Division. So Chicago gets the home game here. Chicago favored by 3.5 goals. What do you think, Keith?
This one is I would lean Chicago right off the bat. The one thing I feel like that makes me question that is the status of some Minnesota players, particularly on the road. You know, I think it was a bit of a surprise for some people last week to see them play without Josh Klein and Brett Matsuka. Their other handlers stepped up capably, but had some errors as well. And I think that team would benefit a lot from having those two guys on the field. So I wish we had a game day roster as we were getting into these picks, but we don't. So we got to move forward without them. The chance of those two missing the game, Minnesota not looking super impressive in that sloppy win over Madison. A good, valuable win, don't get me wrong, showed a lot of grit, but I wasn't blown away by their performance. Chicago, a bit untested in their week one drubbing of Indy, but the talent is there. They're going to be at home. I expect them to be pretty fired up to be getting their home opener, so I'm taking Chicago here.
Yeah, we're going to roll the favorites this week. Pretty sure Stahl 7 took Minnesota here, but we're going to take Chicago. I think it's so easy to feel like really good about Minnesota after this win from last week. But I think the thing to remember is that they basically lost the game. Like they had to have an incredible series of events play out in order for them to win that game. Madison should have won the game, right? But instead of throwing a scuba directly into a defender, the Madison player should have just thrown the disc up into the sky and the game is over. So keep that in mind. And Madison was missing key personnel, had a huge turnover, was playing without his best offensive player, Kevin Brown. And so how are we supposed to believe that this Minnesota team is going to go into Chicago and like get a win? I don't see it. Maybe they can cover the 3.5, but I think that this is a tough spot for Minnesota. And Chicago is really good, and Chicago knows how important this game is. You know, in a 12-game season, you really can't let games get away from you. You can't. You lose one game. Like, Madison is already in a bad way from losing that one game against Minnesota. Like, they now have to win a game they shouldn't later this year because they lose their home opener. So, yeah. Anyway, Chicago, I see Chicago winning here by 5 goals. I think the line's a little low. So we're going to take the Union, as they're now called.
Just a shout out though to KPS.
Oh,
what a start to the year.
Unbelievable.
Week one MVP, perhaps. I dare say it, but wow. Very impressive. I've a little bit of a skeptic as him as a star, rather than kind of a role player, but he definitely looked the part.
I mean, he was doing everything for them. Offense, defense, you know, motivational plays, the whole thing. And again, like, Madison won the game. They just didn't, they managed to somehow let it slip away, you know, seize defeat from the jaws of victory.
And that's not counting his incredibly clutch layout block that I still have yet to see a replay of to convince me that there was contact.
Yeah, that was a horrible call by the referees in that spot. I mean, it's just a totally.
How is there no replay? Come on.
All right. Well, Keith, thanks so much for stopping in. It's great to chat and get some picks on the board, and looking forward to having you back on the show on a regular basis very soon.
Absolutely. Glad to be back. Appreciate you holding things down without me, and who knows if I'll be able to pop in next week. My schedule is so variable, and soon hopefully we'll have more of a stable plan, but looking forward to my long-term return.
Keith Rayner joining me here on Deep Look. I got to give it to you, Keith. The Hawks just absolutely crushed my Knicks. They didn't even really put up much of a fight. It was tough to see it. I don't want to believe it, but the facts are the facts. And, you know, you have to have your best player show up and play well. And we didn't. And the Hawks look really good. I mean, they're going to be competitive in this series right now.
The theory of the Hawks is like, is on display, and the theory of Trae. I think Trae Young's done a lot to validate himself as a potential offensive build around in a way that I think a lot of people would have been skeptical of. Still, we didn't win the Luka trade or anything, but you can start to see what they were thinking when they did it.
I mean, Atlanta did such an amazing job against the Knicks of, you know, getting Trae out there to scorch us on offense and then managing to hide him on defense to the level that we could not get quality shots. And when we did get quality shots, we couldn't make them. So credit to the Hawks. Playing at full strength, it turns out, makes a real difference. So
it sure does. It sure does. The Knicks, unfortunately, I just not really built for playoff success.
No,
I think.
No. We ginned it up in our minds, though, Keith. It was like, you know, Randall's going to keep hitting those fadeaway baseline jumpers with three people in his face. And he went cold.
Not happening. But you know what? Be proud of the season the team had, 100%. And certainly of Julius Randle's season.
I'm so excited to see them next year. It was a great season. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Deep Look. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll be back with you next week.